Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Terry Bellows, Ron Butwin, and Tom Zippy Kaplan from The Escapades. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is May 4th, 2014, and I'm talking with three members of The Escapades, Terry Bellows, Ron Butwin, and Tom Zippy Kaplan. Let's start with your full name and your date of birth and hometown, please. Terry.
I'm Terry Bellows. I'm from St. Paul. I was born February 13th, 1947.
I'm Ron Butwin from St. Paul, Highland Village, and I was born on December 13th, 1946.
Zippy Kaplan, born August 18th, 1946 in St. Paul.
And let's get your high school and date of graduation, please.
Terry, I went to Creighton High School. I graduated in June of 1965.
Ron?
And I graduated, Ron Butwin, from St. Paul Central in June of 1964.
And I graduated from U High in June of 1964.
Terry, what were you doing prior to the formation of the Escapades?
I was still in school, of course, and I was playing just in a neighborhood band with three other people here, and got a lot of experience playing instrumentals and some vocals.
What instrument did you play?
I played the bass guitar.
Did your band have a name?
The name of the band, as I recall, was the Ketones.
And what kind of music were you playing?
We were playing a lot of instrumentals, ventures, different things like that, and some simple singing songs of the time in the early 60s, songs from like 1960 to 64, but no Beatles songs or anything quite like that.
And do you recall the first bass guitar you bought and where you got it from?
See, I think I bought it through the paper, and I don't remember what the name of that thing was. It was a nameless brand. I think I got it for $100 in February of 1964.
Ron and Zippy, you both had been in the Uniques, and how long was it since the Uniques had come to an end before the Escapades start up?
We started moving pretty quickly when the one group broke up. Tom and I had already planned on building a new group, so we literally started. One closed up, and the other one was getting started pretty quickly. So I'd say it was in a period of maybe a month and a half, we had really moved on to the next stage.
Yeah, except that in between, while that was going on, we were jobbing. Mm-hmm. And I use the word jobbing with the Continentals. Even though that wasn't our band per se, they needed people to take the place of some people that had left. Or it was a jobbing situation and not a solid band situation. And while we were doing that, we were getting the ball rolling to get the Escapades put together.
Were you actually auditioning people?
Yep.
Yes, we were bringing in really a lot of the local musicians that were going into other groups or were in other groups that were willing to leave, and we were auditioning people right and left.
And we knew that we wanted to do the British thing. We weren't quite sure exactly at that point, I don't think, how we were going to do it, in what manner, but we knew we wanted to do, because that was really, or the Uniques ended, that was right on the cusp and overlapped a little bit, the beginning of the Beatles invasion and them being on Ed Sullivan. So we knew we were going to go in that direction, we just weren't quite sure how we were going to do that. So the people we were looking for had to fit into that mode.
So at what point now in 64 did you start auditioning people?
I would say that it was in...
Early.
Well, I was going to say it was probably in the early fall of 64, because we spent about 3 months rehearsing before we went and did the Chuck Berry show. So we might have been playing around and trying to get people in the group, but I think
we were auditioning people in the spring and summer.
Until
we got everybody in, because it took a while to get. I mean, we didn't just go out and do that Chuck Berry show. We had to learn those harmonies and all that stuff. So I think it was probably early 64 when the Uniques ended, and probably somewhere in the summer when we had the right people, or even late summer for the Escapades. And while we were doing that, of course, we were jobbing with the Continentals off and on for gigs.
So who's the first musician you hire to join the Escapades with you two?
I think it was Rico.
And Rico Rosenbaum?
Yeah, I think it was Rico. But at the same time, we were auditioning bass players. So it was it would have been a pretty close... Actually, the way I think of it now, I think that we had brought Terry in before Rico. And
so?
That we had brought him in and started to have him... Because I think Terry was there. You can tell me, Terry. I think Terry was there when we did the first audition with Rico.
Yeah, it was the time frame was real close, though, because I knew Rico from before.
I don't remember if he was or not. But
I'm pretty sure of that, because it was like that was the last job to fill, and we were having a tough time. We had auditioned. You'd be amazed at who the musicians were that auditioned for that spot. And we just kept looking. There was just like it was hard to find the person that was going to fill that spot that we wanted. And I believe that Terry was there or had just come on.
You might be right about that, because I do remember that the hardest part of that whole thing was finding somebody to, you know, what the spot that Rico eventually took. And you're right. I think maybe Terry was there. So when we bring these people in, we already have the core.
Right.
Because I remember.
Now, do you recall if Enrico was playing in a band at that time?
Yes. And Terry knows something about this too, but from quite a while before this, Rico was in a group of friends that I was friendly with, and so was the drummer that was in that band. And so both of them had kept asking me for months and months to come over and listen to them rehearse. Maybe I could give them some ideas or something, because they were not at a very high level in comparison to what we were anticipating.
I think I was there when we heard them. I think I was with you.
So I arranged to go over, and the guy's house was right half a block from me. So it was convenient. I went over, and Zippy might have been there. I don't recall that, but I went over, and they rehearsed. And right off the bat, I could tell, here's a band. The drummer isn't on rhythm. The guitar player
is not. Well, I was there. It's coming back to me. I do remember we heard him, but we really were impressed with Rico.
We could
you and
tell,
I talked about him afterwards.
We could tell. It was very clear that while his guitar playing was on par with the other guys at that time, that he had a singing voice. It just wasn't able to come out in that group. And then I know that Tom and I talked about this and said, look, we're going to bring this guy over and audition him with us. And now he has to, he's got to move his show up to where we are, at least at that point. And he came in and he did a really nice job. He didn't know all the chords to a lot of songs we were throwing at him.
No, but his voice, you know, four bars into the first song, I'm thinking, this is the guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we just knew right away.
And he really wanted to be in a group that was going to do what we were going to do. It was just the right mix. And we just knew that he could come up to he could really raise himself up to what was going to be needed. And he did very quickly. It was amazing.
Terry, were you a fan of the British bands at this point?
Absolutely. Just touching back on Rico, I did have some experience working with him a couple of years prior to this now. And I was playing bass guitar on a regular guitar. But nonetheless, I had experiences with Rico's ability to sing. And in those times, he was singing things like Ruby by
Dion.
Yeah, and he could do all that stuff.
So
well, this guy's got a good voice. So when it was mentioned that they were going to have Enrico come in and audition, I thought, oh, boy, let's have him come in. So that and the rest is history. So, yeah.
Which is interesting because I don't think we remember that tie-in. We probably knew back then, but it's nice to be able to hear that there was a sense of connectiveness earlier than that. That's
sure.
Nice.
Now, your plan is to do all British songs?
The plan was we were trying to figure out what we could do that's going to bring us on very different than anybody else in town. And it evolved. I mean, Tom and I had really planned that we were going to start to pick up this music. And we both had committed ourselves to it, that we weren't going to do venture stuff. And we weren't going to, this was going to be the new sound. And very quickly, within the short time after Rico joined, it was quite obvious we could do this music and pull it off. Now, the question was it going to be like a local group doing this music? Which the kids locally would say, oh, it's so much fun to see this group do it. But it was a local group. the decision became, we're going to do this as like we're an English group. We're not going to come out with cheap plastic wigs and so on. We're going to dress like the English groups. We're going to wear the boots, the tight pants, the turtlenecks, the velvet sweaters or coats or whatever we were going to wear, and we were going to have long hair.
Yeah, but we couldn't grow the long hair fast enough, so that's where the wigs came in. But we knew that if we had a gimmick, and that's the word really, gimmick, that it would set us apart from just being another local band and shoot the name out there really quick, and that was what the goal was. We just weren't sure how we were going to do that, but eventually became clear, well, wait a minute, we can get this shirt here, we can get these boots here, mm-hmm. What we can do with our hair, we can't grow it out in a week, you know. And then I can't remember whose idea it was, so why don't we get wigs? But eventually it got to the point where we had to have the wigs, and I don't know where they came from, because I don't remember where we got them or whatever, but they were really expensive, really real-looking wigs. And we had to have them, I remember being in a salon and having a hairdresser actually get them styled properly and everything. And then when we put them on, they were on pretty good. And I don't remember how they were on, but they were on good. I think they clipped into our hair or something.
Ron, do you recall where the wigs came from?
Yes, I do. One of my friends was also a friend of Rico's, and I just can't think of her name, but we'll hopefully try and get it for you. And she worked as like the manager of a beauty salon downtown St. Paul in either the Emporium or the Golden Rule. I just not sure, but we can find that out. We talked to her about it. We said we wanted to have wigs, and she says, "Well, you need real hair wigs. You can't go with these ones they're selling on in the stores, the Beatles wigs, which are plastic." And so she said, "We can pull this off." She says, and we said, "But we don't want anyone to know this is happening. And how do we pull it off?" She says, "I'll arrange it so we can come in on a Sunday. I'll order the wigs, and you guys can pick the colors. They can pick the colors they want. If they want dark or light or whatever, and I'll order the wigs in. They'll be human hair wigs. And they'll be very long, and then I'll cut them to each one of the people's to the style that they want. We'll do it in here on a Sunday. You'll leave. You'll have them, and that we actually glued them on. We had glue for the sideburns. If we needed to, we could glue them across the scalp so that they would stay on and look good."
I think seem to remember clips though too on the inside that clipped into your hair, because when I did get it pulled one time, it actually hurt. So I think they were somehow intertwined with our real hair. But Terry said that, and I didn't remember this, but he said that these wigs cost us $90 a piece. Is that right?
More.
They were more than that. They were over $100.
That was a lot
time.
Of money in 1964. That was a lot of money.
So she styled up the wigs, and she really did a good job. And Rico wanted to have a style that was a little closer to the Rolling Stones type of look. I wanted a style that was in between those two, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. Tom had more of the Beatles look, and so did you. Mm-hmm. But we just had that variety of looks, and it worked out quite well. The only time that we were really nervous about it was at the Dayton's Top 10 Club when we went to appear there the first time. There was so many screaming kids. We hadn't anticipated it, and once we were done with our performance, we went back into the dressing room, and they wouldn't let us come out, and we had trouble leaving. Do you remember this?
Yeah,
we had trouble leaving because the kids were, thousands of kids were everywhere, and the girls were trying to, you know, grab our hair and our clothes and whatever. And so we knew early on that we better keep these suckers glued on and put in place really well.
Is that when we decided to have the bodyguard type of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then we got a couple of guys that one on each side. And we walked single file with a guy on each side of the four of us, and they'd walk us to the stage and off the stage even at places like Mr. Lucky's and whatever. We had them all the time, and they'd try and get to us, but they couldn't get through the two bodyguards, because we knew if somebody pulled one of those off, the whole deal was blown.
Now, is Enrico the only one in the band who's doing vocals?
No. All of us did, and the way that worked, and I just want to interject here, that group, unlike the Uniques or the Continentals or even probably, I don't know about some of the other groups in town, but that group was really hard work, because I wasn't really a lead singer, neither was Ron, and neither was Terry, you know, and so it didn't just come automatically like it did for Rico, so he had to sit there and pound these harmonies into us. I mean, we'd spend hours sometimes on some of the songs where, no, it's not like that, it's like this. But by the time we got on stage, especially I remember the first time we played Mr. Lucky's, we had it down. We had it down perfect because the underbeats were there. And they were going, whoa, wait a minute here, you know, because they prided themselves on good harmonies and stuff, and we just were killing it.
So Enrico was the lead singer,
yeah,
and you three did harmony vocals.
Yeah, but it was really big-time hard work.
But it wasn't like our harmonies, wasn't like the Beatles, where they could naturally harmonize. I mean, who knows how much work they had to do to harmonize each other. But this was not, we were not great singers.
No, we were the first to admit it, too. But Rico whipped us into shape. I got to hand it to him for that, even though sometimes I wanted to pop him one. But but no, he really did a good job on pounding those harmonies in. Eventually, after a while, they came quicker to us as we got used to hearing how to do that. We actually got them a little quicker.
The oohs and the ahs were easy.
Yeah, those were
easy.
It was
the other kind of harmonies where
right.
you're...
Stuff like This Boy and that, where there's,
Some of the stuff I would take the lead, and then Rico, because of his higher range, would go over that, like mm-hmm. All My Lovin' by the Beatles in the second stanza of it. You know, that harmony is gets pretty high, so I would just do the melody.
So, I mean, I you could say this was a planned show, basically, that was put together for a specific reason in a certain way. And, I mean, this wasn't just a group of guys getting together and start banging out Chuck Berry song. This was a whole big production is what it was in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. And it paid off because everybody bought into it. Everybody. Even the local musicians, it took them a while before they realized, wait a minute here, I know who these guys are. You know, so.
Do you recall the first gig the Escapades played and when it was?
First gig we played was as the Escapades. Was at the St. Paul Armory in St. Paul, obviously, with Chuck Berry, and we were the opening act. That was on December 31st, 1964. And so it was the New Year's Eve show. It was highly promoted. It was an exciting evening. And to everyone's knowledge, except for the promoter that I dealt with, who was not part of the show himself, not a musician, but helped us get into this show, everyone, including Chuck Berry, thought we were English. And we came on, and it was something to the effect of, well, we'd like to welcome you all here this afternoon or this evening. You know, we're the Escapades, and we've come here just to play for you guys tonight. And so that's how we approached our show initially.
You have a little Ringo in you there.
Just a little bit, you know.
Am I right that only you talked on stage?
Yeah,
right?
At first.
Only you talked using the English accent.
For a while, even when we got to date with Dino over the next couple of weeks, we tried to play it. The kids all thought, some of the promoters, local booking agents that were there that night, thought we were English. One of the promoters came up and said to me, because he recognized my drum set, he said, aren't you... And that was a surprise. And at first I didn't give in to it. But then after the second set, he came up and said, that's got to be you. That's got to be you. I said, no, I don't think, you know, I don't know who Tim Kerr is. I'm sorry, I can't help you. And he said, that's Ron's drums. And so that's how he found out. But
who was it?
Tim Kerr.
Oh, it was Tim Kerr.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so besides Tim Kerr and the members of the band, who else knew who the Escapades really were?
The gal that did our wigs, of course, knew it. Our families, you know,
right.
Close families. We had the owner and president of Channel 9 Television, Don Swartz, and eventually his son, who also worked in the station, because they ran the Date with Dino show, which we were going to go on, and I got us on there because of knowing him. We got in easier. They knew. Dick Shapiro, the booking agent, knew, and Marsh Edelstein knew, because we were going to be doing jobs for them literally as a follow-up after this show. And Bill Deal was also aware of it, not immediately, but once we were actually at the performance, he knew this.
And who got you this job?
This job, this came across very interestingly. I had a friend who was the manager of the Musicland store downtown St. Paul. I would see him when I'd go downtown St. Paul a lot on weekends to go to movies or whatever, and I'd see him. We'd go out to lunch, whatever. And one day he said, I've got an opportunity for you. Do you think your band that you're rehearsing can come along quick enough? I said, what's the opportunity? And he said, Chuck Berry is going to be in town on this date. I know it because I know the promoters. I know everyone that's involved in it. I think I can get you on that show as an opening act. And I came back at the next, I think we were going to rehearse that night or something. I came back and I told the guys, we got this unbelievable opportunity. Can we do it? We didn't have a full set of songs at this point. When we did Chuck Berry, we used up our whole set of songs before one set was even over. I mean, we just really were trying to learn as fast as we could. I said, we can do it. The guys all agreed to it. And that was what we shot for. And we did a great job. It was a huge success that first night. And we, not only did we love it, we got to play with Chuck Berry. And we got to experience a big name with us. I mean, it was just very exciting. And so that was really the story behind I did pass over something. So Frank Vinopal, the manager of the Musicland, went back and arranged it for us to get on. So when they did the radio ads, it was going to be Chuck Berry with the Escapades. And it was going to be that concept. The posters said that. And he really pulled it together from the promotion standpoint for us.
Who came up with the name, the Escapades?
Ron and I came up with it. We're going to tell the truth here. We came up with it together because we went to, on University Avenue. There was a club, and I don't remember the name of the club, but there was a nightclub.
Belmont place. Or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, something like that. And we went there to hear a group that we heard was really good. This is before we had a name. And we went there to hear them just because we wanted to hear them. And they were really good. And we sat there, and the name of the group was, they were from Wisconsin or something.
No, they were from Texas or something.
Oh, were they?
Like, yeah.
And the name of the group was the Escapades. So we stole the name. That's as simple as that.
They weren't a rock and roll band,
no,
per se.
No, they were a show band.
They were a nightclub show band. And we liked the group. We both sat in. I don't know if you remember. We both got to sit in with the group that night. We met them after the first set, and we sat in with them. And so we felt, since we sat in with them, we really had the right now to take the name. They weren't in our marketplace, so to speak.
We just ripped them off. Let's face it. We ripped them off.
Terry, what do you recall about your opening night as the Escapades with Chuck Berry?
Fright. No, I remember we got there late in the afternoon. The sun was still out. We could see it coming through the western doors there. And we got it all set up, did a sound check, everything else. Basically, it was kind of like, all right, we're playing this role. And we met Chuck Berry way before the show actually started. Anyway, we had to kind of ensconce ourselves in the dressing room. And it was really very Spartan when we weren't out amongst the people. And so it was kind of a interesting, though really uneventful evening. And it was just nice to share the stage. And it was kind of like for bragging rights more than I got out of that. But enjoyed playing. And it was nice. It was kind of like, okay, well, we've got out of the gate now. And now we can handle anything. So we did nothing but practice more and more. And I don't think we played our next job for a couple of weeks. And then they started coming more and more.
Well, yeah, after that, then there was a demand for the group. And I remember when we played Schley's Little City, which was shortly after that, the opening act for us, the Delcounts.
They were just, and they were young. They were very young, the Delcounts. They were just this young group of kids. They were awestruck by our band, and we were just surprised that this young group of kids actually sounded pretty good. But that's who they were, and we stayed friendly with them over the years, and watch them change as things were going. It ended up that later on in my career, I actually worked with them for a while just to fill in while they were looking for a new drummer. So we did stay friends with them.
Yeah, no, the place was packed.
Still, just a minute, let me just tell you this quick. When it gets to the Stillwater Armory, we had to be escorted out of town by the police because the boys, many of the boys that were at that dance hated us so much because of the long hair, and the girls were standing there screaming, and their boyfriends were unhappy, and so some of them came back with guns, rifles, and they were waiting for us outside, and the police had to literally take us out of town. Really? And this was early on, but that's what happened. I mean, I just see that, and I think that let us know that we by then had these bodyguards that worked as our band boys, and they were bodyguards too.
Was that typical for girls to scream at you guys?
Yeah, oh. right? I mean, that was...
Starting with Chuck at the Chuck Berry show?
Yeah, right after the... It was the long hair. By the Marigold Ballroom, it was... We had to be escorted... I mean, it was planned with Marsh. We had to be escorted out of the Marigold like the Beatles would be escorted out, and the girls were screaming. They were outside and everything. We were... It was unbelievable.
So basically... The audience thought you were a British band.
There was no question of it. And the local bands believed we were English. I had been with Jim Johnson and Nystrom the day of the Marigold Ballroom when they were playing there as the Battle of the Bands, and we came walking in. I mean, we were brought in, we were announced that we had just landed, and then they escorted us in, and the kids were screaming, and we came up on stage, and the guys were saying, "We're not going to pull this off." Johnson and all, you know, the three bands. Yeah, well, they're going to know us. They're going to know something. You know, they're going. Yeah. And I was working at B Sharp, so I saw these guys weekly. And we walk up, and you know, we had the boots and the sunglasses and everything. And Jim Johnson's the first one. And I walked up to him and I said, "Do you mind if we use your instruments? Do you think we could use your instruments through the evening? We're just going to do a couple songs, partly because we didn't have that many songs. Secondly." That's all Marsh wanted us to do was just, they wanted to announce that we flew in, that they rushed us from the airport to the Marigold. From the Marigold, we did, I don't know how many songs, I'm guessing four, do you remember? Maybe four songs. They let us use their equipment, flown in, they walked us in with the police, the kids were making a big, now they made a much bigger deal. And Zippy standing behind me, "You're never pulling this off, this will never," it was kind of like out of Laurel and Hardy, "Why do you even try this?" And Johnson said very nicely, you know, "Yes, it's not a problem, and we're really excited to hear you guys." Now I had to walk up to Tom Nystrom, who was there for the accents, and say, "Do you mind? Do you think maybe I could use your drums? You know, I don't have a kit here with me. I wonder if you could let me use your drums." And so he said, "Yes, no problem. You know, go ahead." And I sat down, and I played the drums for the show. They never suspected. And I... You know, I must have said something for you to get the bass, and I don't know if Tom had his guitar or not, but we played the songs that we had. The kids were screaming, and it was really something through the whole show. At the end, we said goodbye, thank you very much, we have to go now, and all the groups that were there, the three groups, were just coming up and shaking our hands, and this is really great. And I'm thinking, there's no way, somehow I'm going to give it away now. We got out of there. The police were there. They marched us out. I don't remember if we had a limo or what we had, but they were waiting for us and then we took off. And all they did was take us to a place where we had our cars parked. And then we went home. We took off our wigs, and I don't know how many of us went over to the fast food or the restaurant on Hiawatha. Johnson, Paul Pearson's. That was where the original...
I had to take my wig off immediately, so I wouldn't be seen driving around.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was all a put-on thing. It was huge. When we next appeared on Date with Dino, we now had a name as a group, and we were coming back in town to do the Date with Dino thing.
Now, that's a TV show.
TV show. It was a kid's TV show, like a poor man's American Bandstand. And we got to the studios, and we had to come in the back of the studios. It was in, the Fauché Tower at that time. We had to come in the back way because we were dressed for the show. So it was at the Fauché Tower, and we go in to do this performance, and Dino says, "You know, I don't know how to do this with you guys. Normally the bands, you know, here's the local group, the chancellors or whoever it is, and you know, hey guys, and what school did you go to?" And he says, "I don't know how to do this." And so I suggested, why not do it like Shindig and Hullabaloo are doing, and do it, you'll cut away to England to have this interview. He says, "What do you mean?" I said, "We'll sit behind stage, behind the curtain, I mean, and you do a half screen. Half screen is us and half, and just treat it that way. And we won't come out in front of the kids. We'll just do it all behind the screen. I mean, behind the curtain." And so that's what they did. And so if you remember in Hullabaloo and Shindig, they said, "And now we're going to go to England where we're going to have an interview with Dave Clark 5 or whatever." And so that's how he did it, Date with Dino. And now a new thing on the Date with Dino show, we're going to go to England to interview the Escapades. And then they went to a half screen, and we were all sitting on benches. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Sitting on benches, and there's nothing else special around us, just that. And then we know the kids are out there on the other side. And he does this interview. At first, he starts with me, but by then, somebody else was able to talk with the English accent. I just don't remember which one of you.
I always did.
You did. Okay, yeah. So it probably was you. And so then they could talk to a couple people. And when they got to Tom, he just went, yeah. It was just yes or no questions. And I think with Rico kept going like this with his hair. He kept running his hands down his hair, kind of like Mick Jagger was doing at that time. And he'd nod and say hello. And I don't think he spoke with an English accent. Might have said a couple things. And we got through that whole interview, and they said, and now we hear, don't forget, you're going to be in town here next week at the Marigold Ballroom for a special event. I guess you're just flying in and flying out, right? Yeah, that's what it is. You know, that's it. And they pumped it on all the advertising for the Marigold Ballroom. The Escapades will come in as a special added performance. The Escapades are flying in to do a short performance. So the musicians were excited. The people were excited. And Marsh, who was involved with the TV show that was coming out of the Marigold, which was part of Date with Dino's show, it was a big deal. And so it was fun for us. I mean, we had the first experience of the people tearing at our clothes. I think Terry was handing out business cards, so weren't you, with your phone number on it? I'm not sure of that. And so it was truly something new. Meanwhile, I was working at B Sharp, and the owner, Jim Lopez of B Sharp, was really excited because now he could put his instruments into a group that was from England, so to speak. So he got on to our bandwagon at the same time. So there's kind of the short version of a long story.